Stand and believe in this book you have been led to, rather than ask for the thoughts to be taken away. He knows you have been struggling to be good. He wants you to take the leap of faith this book is advocating. Your thoughts are not a punishment, but they are indeed a challenge. Healthy living. A lot of people think that unwanted intrusive thoughts and other signs of anxiety or emotional distress come from stress, so they try to reduce stress in order to feel better. It's common to double down on healthy behavior whenever we are feeling overwhelmed or out of control. We define healthy behavior as eating right, getting a reasonable amount of exercise, cutting down on alcohol and any other drugs, finding a sleep routine that works, and avoiding obvious forms of stress. Changing a job, breaking up an unhealthy relationship, and taking a vacation may reduce stress, but they will not lead to a lasting solution to the problem of unwanted intrusive thoughts. There are plenty of good reasons to eat right and get good exercise. In fact, it is clear that healthy eating and healthy exercise improve your mood and lower anxiety. But unfortunately, these activities alone won't stop your unwanted intrusive thoughts. There is a relationship between stress and fatigue on the one hand, and unwanted intrusive thoughts on the other. Eating, exercise, and sleeping well as avoiding drugs and reducing stress, may reduce the intensity and frequency of intrusions. Conversely, poor eating and sleeping, lack of exercise, drinking alcohol, and a highly stressful lifestyle tends to increase the intensity and frequency of unwanted intrusive thoughts. But, and here is the point we would like you to take away, healthy living will not cure unwanted intrusive thoughts, and unhealthy living will not cause them. While healthy living may temporarily reduce your sticky mind, it has no effect at all on the other two factors, paradoxical effort and entanglement, that function to keep your intrusive thoughts going. Other counterproductive techniques. Techniques for ridding yourself, bypassing, or avoiding unwanted intrusive thoughts are attempts at control. The problem is that attempts to control are prime examples of paradoxical effort and are guaranteed to increase entanglement. Trying to control the thoughts is entirely the wrong attitude. It ignores the fact that the thoughts are meaningless and harmless and don't require controlling. The attempt to control them reinforces the wrong message. It is an example of paradoxical effort. It works backward. It suggests urgency, importance, and danger when none exists. You may be aware of the Serenity Prayer recited daily by people in 12-step programs. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. In this case, what cannot be changed is the arrival of the unwanted thought. It just happens. And the first fear, or initial jolt of emotion, is what arrives with it. Our consistent message is that what can be changed is your reaction to that experience. That is what you are trying to do. It does take lots of courage to just let it happen and not react to the false alarms. You have to just let the thought be there and trust that it is okay to do that, even while you cannot be 100% absolutely certain. And this is why techniques, if applied with the wrong attitude, can actually make your discomfort increase rather than the opposite. Don't think of coping techniques as a form of non-chemical tranquilizers. Even if techniques enable you to temporarily lower your distress, they will not solve the problems of entanglement and paradoxical effort. Here is an illustration of how technique application can either be helpful or make things worse. Abdominal, slow, or diaphragmatic breathing that is undertaken with the goal of making anxiety or thoughts go away will not ultimately be helpful. In contrast, breathing slowly and naturally while you allow unwelcome thoughts to be there can indeed be helpful. If calming methods are applied without the intention of banishing thoughts, but simply to be okay while continuing to experience the thoughts, then there is no need for the monitoring or checking to see what has happened to the thoughts. Popular advice. Following is a list of techniques recommended by popular magazines, friends, family, and even therapists. Well-intentioned people frequently suggest that such coping techniques are goals, and if you practice them diligently, you can learn to manage your anxiety. You will then have these tools at your fingertips and be able to use them successfully whenever the need arises. Unfortunately, they are all attempts to control your thoughts that end up backfiring. None of them, in fact, is ultimately helpful. The problem is that they stop working, even though they may seem helpful at first, as no doubt you have already discovered. There is a very good reason why they stop working, and it is not your fault. These techniques convey the wrong attitude and send the wrong message. Coping is not the goal here. Coping does not provide lasting recovery because it fails to address an essential change of attitude. Our goal is much more enduring and profound than mere coping. We want you to reach the point where you do not care whether the thoughts come or not. We would like you to turn off the alarm system in reaction to these thoughts so your amygdala no longer needs to warn of danger. We want you to change your relationship with the thoughts so they no longer cause distress. This reduces dread and stickiness, so ultimately the thoughts will cease to bother you at all. See if you can recognize one or more of these pieces of advice that you have tried and not found helpful for very long. 1. Try to relax by exerting more willpower. The suggestion here is to put in more effort, but unfortunately, what you resist persists, and you inadvertently produce paradoxical effort. It is impossible to force yourself to relax by using willpower. 2. Stop worrying about it. You will make yourself sick. The implication here is that the worry is more dangerous than the thoughts. This is called meta-worry and leads to more concerns, more anxiety, more stickiness, and more intrusive thoughts, not fewer. 3. Everything will be okay. Trust me. I promise. Clearly, this is the voice of false comfort, sometimes called empty reassurance. Your own worried voice will respond almost immediately with, "Yes, but..." 4. Calculate the probability of that happening. This is often called rational disputation or reasoning. Unfortunately, your fearful, worried voice starts arguing because it does not matter how likely something might be, it only matters that it would be terrible if it actually happened. This increases entanglement through paradoxical effort. 5. Don't think about it, think about something else. Distraction is a direct invitation to the ironic process, an example of paradoxical effort we introduced in Chapter 1. The effects of distraction are momentary, and you can become desperate, frustrated, disgusted, or fearful when the thoughts insist on returning. 6. Think happy thoughts or affirmations. This is called suppression and has the same problem. The implication is that these thoughts are dangerous or that they indicate bad things about you. This increases entanglement and makes the thoughts more sticky in the long run. It is the very opposite of the attitude of acceptance. 7. Have more faith. Pray to have the thoughts removed. As we discussed earlier in this chapter, this kind of prayer can backfire in demoralizing and devastating ways. 8. Stay positive. Negative attracts negative. This is called magical thinking by psychologists and is an example of entanglement with thoughts. There is no evidence that thoughts can affect actual facts in the world. They are thoughts. Try thinking yourself into a sudden death. Or try using your thoughts to push over a bookcase. Nothing happens. And the effort to think only positive thoughts is a form of paradoxical effort that results in more negative ones. 9. Cut out sugar and caffeine, try this tea, and exercise it away. As we discussed earlier, it is not true that unwanted intrusive thoughts are caused by stress and that lifestyle changes will take them away. They are stress sensitive, but not due to stress. Reduction in stress can reduce some aspects of stickiness, but has no effect on entanglement or paradoxical effort. 10. Dump the boyfriend or the job, take a vacation, and don't watch the news. This is a formula for avoidance, which is absolutely the most effective fuel for keeping unwanted intrusive thoughts fired up and active. It makes two mistakes. The first is the implication that unwanted intrusive thoughts are meaningful messages, even if they seem inconsistent with what you believe. This is an example of entanglement. So if your unwanted thoughts are negative statements about your beloved boyfriend, then this technique implies you should respect the messages and get rid of him, and you will have no peace until you do. Or, if you are having intrusive doubts about your mental health and otherwise feel okay, it implies that you should treat yourself as if you were emotionally fragile and get rid of anything disturbing in your life. The second mistake is twofold. First, the idea that having intrusive thoughts means you are falling apart, and second, that a big life change or stress reduction will fix the problem. Avoidance solves nothing. 11. Snap this rubber band every time you think it. This technique was once called thought stopping and was actually recommended by therapists before a full understanding of unwanted intrusive thoughts was developed. It is a form of punishment and results in a sore wrist and increased frequency of thoughts. It gives the incorrect message that thoughts should be avoided, an attitude that increases both paradoxical effort and entanglement. 12. Practice meditation and yoga, and the thoughts will go away. Meditation and yoga can both be helpful in reducing the tendency to have a sticky mind and to get entangled with thoughts. But if they are done with the intention of banishing or conquering thoughts, instead of relating to them differently, they will not be helpful. Techniques can be applied in active or fighting ways that produce desperation, frustration, and fear, and make the thoughts stickier, increase entanglement, and become prime examples of paradoxical effort. Or they can be applied in passive ways, which reinforce the fact that the thoughts do not constitute a danger, do not need to be fought, have no special significance, and will go away on their own once they are left alone. The best perspective is one that is not at all obvious. Instead of battling with the problem, you can try to willingly and intentionally go toward uncertainty and distress. When you do not recoil from your own thoughts, they lose their power. When you face the dragon, he turns out to be made of fluff. By now, you should have quite an understanding of unwanted intrusive thoughts and why so many of your best effort attempts to get rid of them have been unsuccessful. A comprehensive list of the varieties of intrusions has allowed you to identify your own kinds of thoughts, and you have learned how your brain works to automatically trigger your alarm response when it encounters sensitized thoughts, sensations, and memories. You have the information to bust the 9 myths that contribute to stuck thoughts, and we have demonstrated how unwanted intrusive thoughts get stuck precisely because they are not you and feel inconsistent with your beliefs and values. You have come to understand that the worst part of every intrusive thought is not the thought itself, but your internal commentary that follows. Reducing the commentary will reduce your distress. We explained how the 3 factors of sticky mind, paradoxical effort, and entanglement all work to keep these unwanted intruders alive. So now it is time to apply what you have learned and continue with your progress toward recovery. Your goal is nothing less than being done with these intruders and keeping them from making your life so miserable. The challenge is twofold. The first is to learn the proper attitude to adopt each time an unwanted intrusive thought pops in your mind. The second is to retrain your brain so your newly learned attitudes become your habitual or default reaction. Your goal is to allow these threatening thoughts to become less and less important, so your relationship to the content of these thoughts changes profoundly. The aim is not just to manage the anxiety and distress each time it arises, but to actually overcome the apprehension that unwanted intrusive thoughts could ever torture you again. In the next chapter, you are going to create new circuitry in your brain that reacts in a fundamentally different way to these intrusions. Let's continue our work together to turn your disturbing, unwanted, intrusive thoughts into things of the past. Chapter 7. How to Handle Thoughts When They Happen. This chapter is about developing a way to reduce your distress from unwanted intrusive thoughts, whether they are in response to a recent trigger or they just seem to pop up out of the blue. Your attitude towards these thoughts makes all the difference, and the attitude that works is called acceptance. This chapter defines what acceptance means and what it doesn't mean, and provides specific steps for achieving it. First, we present the 6 steps for best coping with each intrusive thought as it occurs. This provides a detailed outline to guide your own response to these intruders. Next, we present the 3 most common classes of reactions that get in the way of successfully following these guidelines. Then, we present a variety of illustrative stories or metaphors that demonstrate the therapeutic attitude of acceptance. As we have discussed, the distress over intrusions and the struggle with them tends to make them stronger and stickier over time. Yet, under most circumstances, repeating things gets boring, and we get used to them and stop paying attention. So why don't you just get used to these kinds of thoughts? We have all been taught that if you face your fears, they will go away, and that exposure is what helps. If you are afraid of elevators, get on them over and over again, and you will get over your fear of them. If you are afraid of public speaking, take a course in which you learn to do it every week. So why doesn't this work with unwanted thoughts? Surely you are getting plenty of exposure already. The problem is that exposure must be done the right way. Otherwise, it can have the opposite effect and can actually empower and reinforce intrusions. Exposure that is done right must be willing and free of struggle. Many common sense methods that seem to be helping you cope in the moment don't fit these conditions. Specifically, your struggle with intrusive thoughts is what keeps them coming back. As a result, despite your best efforts and intentions, you are actually prolonging the problem. There is a difference between coping with each unwanted intrusive thought as it occurs and embarking on a program to be done with them. You are reading this book because intrusive thoughts are making your life, or the life of someone you care about greatly, quite miserable. So you want to know what to do right now, as each intrusive thought crams into your mind. That approach makes perfect sense, and in this chapter, we present the most effective ways of coping with each unwanted intrusive thought as it occurs. People have found this enormously helpful because common sense methods of coping, as discussed in previous chapters, most often just empower the next intrusive thought. When you are simply trying to make the best of each intrusive thought, your goal is to get through that particular episode of intrusions with the least amount of pain and distress. Learning to better cope with the next one is secondary to the main goal of just getting through the experience. As a result, there is often little long-term change. You have already learned that your old methods of coping are not helpful in the long run, because they usually involve trying to avoid, reassure, justify, or argue with the thoughts. And each one of these techniques empowers the thought and makes it more potent and scary the next time. But here's some great news for you. Every bit of information you have learned so far has worked to change your perspective and understanding of intrusions. Every myth about thoughts you uncovered has helped change the way you relate to these thoughts. And you now understand why common sense methods to cope actually increase the problem. This chapter has 2 goals. First, to provide a better way of coping each time you experience an intrusive thought, and second, to retrain your brain. These 2 work together. As you are coping better, you are automatically beginning the process of retraining your brain to be less fearful. 6 steps to reduce distress over a thought. There are 6 essential steps for coping with each unwanted intrusive thought. If you practice them regularly, you will be breaking bad habits and training your brain to be less susceptible to future intrusive thoughts. You can remember the 6 steps by committing the acronym RJAFTP to memory. 1. R. Recognize. 2. J. Just thoughts. 3. A. Accept and allow. 4. F. Float and feel. 5. T. Let time pass. 6. P. Proceed. You can make up a sentence to help you remember the steps. For example, Robert just ate fries, tacos, and pie. Step 1. Recognize. Pause and label. Say to yourself something like, "Right now I am having a thought that intrudes into my awareness. This is an intrusive thought. It has caught my attention because of how it feels." Worried voice. "What if I kill my son?" Wise mind. "This is an intrusive thought. You can tell because it feels so awful." This is a process of observing yourself as you experience each intrusive thought. What emotions do you feel? What sensations make up the feeling that accompanies the intrusion? You are attempting to remain as mindful as possible, watching yourself from a curious and non-judgmental viewpoint. Both of these actions are counterintuitive, since your alarm response is already labeling the thought as dangerous and pumping up your body to fight or flee the thought. So your goal is to be willing to allow these thoughts, even when you are not expecting them, and to try not to be blindsided by their appearance. That gives you the best chance of interrupting your ingrained response long enough to say to yourself, "Wait, this is one of those thoughts that feel dangerous, but isn't. This is an intrusive thought." There is another element that makes this even harder. You can never be 100% certain that you are correct. There is always the possibility that you might be wrong. Remember that whenever you experience the effects of anxious thinking, having even a 99% probability of certainty still isn't enough. There is no risk that feels reasonable. You are looking for total and complete certainty. This fight for certainty fuels your worried voice and makes it harder for you to label your thought as an intrusive one. You focus on the content of your thought, rather than the result of a false alarm triggered by an eager amygdala. So the action of labeling helps you to practice the art of allowing reasonable uncertainty in your life. We will talk more about this important element when we discuss ways to practice in Chapter 8. Helpful fact. Certainty is a feeling, not a fact. Step 2. Just thoughts. Remind yourself. Dig up the information you already know, that these thoughts are automatic, and you can safely leave them alone. Say lightly to yourself, "These thoughts are automatic and are best left alone." Simply stating these facts gently to yourself helps to disentangle yourself from your thoughts. Worried voice. "Oh no!" Wise mind. "Thoughts are just thoughts. Junk thoughts are still junk thoughts. No need to do anything." Reminding yourself helps you differentiate between what you can and cannot control. As we have shown, the thought and the resultant whoosh of distress is automatic, which is what we call the first fear. This lies outside of your control. But remember, you have the capacity either to increase that fear into second fear or to leave it alone. Leaving it alone allows your natural calming process to take over. Leaving these thoughts alone is a way to avoid entanglement. Anything you do at this point that involves effort tends to push first fear into second fear. This is the point where paradoxical effort prolongs the thought and makes it seem more dangerous. Think of the Chinese finger trap, in which you have to do the opposite of your common sense reaction to free yourself. Leaving the thought alone may feel like the opposite reaction, but it is the best way to release the grip on the thought. Think of having a tug of war with thoughts and what happens if you just drop the rope. Your job is to remind yourself of what you already know: intrusions, whooshes of fear, and the tendency to label the thought as dangerous all occur very quickly. But you are working to remember, at that moment, to call up your wise mind and say, "I can sit this one out." Step 3. Accept and allow. Accept and allow the thoughts in your mind. Do not try to push them away. This is a complicated suggestion, and many people ask questions about it and find it difficult to comprehend. We will talk about this later in more detail, but for the present, your job is not to distract, not to engage, and not to reason away. Worried voice. "What if I kill him?" False comfort. "No, you won't. You're just tired. Maybe you're unconsciously angry at your son." Maybe you ate some bad meat. I just know there must be some explanation for your bad thought. Wise mind. Accept and allow means leave them alone. Let them do whatever they do. Just observe. Don't allow yourself to start exploring the ideas or content of your thoughts. Don't try to come up with a plan or solve any problem that appears to be created by your thought. When you do this, you are trying to figure out the answer to a problem that has no answer. Furthermore, it is not a problem. What does it mean to accept and allow the thoughts? Accept does not mean I am stuck forever with these thoughts and the misery around them, so I just have to put up with them. It also does not mean I have to accept the content of these thoughts that says I'm bad, crazy, or flawed. Accept and allow means that you are actively allowing the thoughts to be there, not wishing they were gone, because this attitude helps you grasp that the thoughts are unimportant. They do not require any attention or response. You might even welcome the thoughts as another opportunity to teach the brain a different way. Accept and allow also recognizes that you might very well get another intrusive thought. So when you are actively allowing the thoughts to be there, you are also letting yourself know that another one might follow. There is a saying that goes, "The devil is in the details." This refers to the truism that mistakes are usually made in the small details of a task. Sometimes, apparently small details in your reaction can make the difference between allowing and engaging. There is a critical difference between thinking, "This is an intrusive thought," or "Thoughts are just thoughts," as opposed to, "This thought is not true." The first two statements label the thought and disengage from its content. The second evaluates the content of the thought. Is it a true or false message? It also adds a dash of self-reassurance about the content, thereby suggesting the content is worth considering. So the statement, "This is an intrusive thought," allows the intrusive thought, while "This is not true," engages with it. The change of attitude from engaging to accepting and allowing can be very subtle. Here is one way to understand what it means to accept, not push away, and also not engage with each intrusive thought. The voice of false comfort always spurs on worried voice. Not engaging with each unwanted intrusive thought involves silencing false comfort. That robs worried voice of the fuel it needs to keep spouting fears. Silencing false comfort is one way of refusing to engage with your intrusive thought. Remember that you can expect to feel the initial alarm. This is your amygdala doing its job. But right after that whoosh of distress arrives, your job is to keep false comfort in check. Each of the following are habits of false comfort, whom you are trying to silence. Stay away from them. When you notice false comfort stepping forward, gently withdraw your attention and participation. False comfort wants you to engage the thoughts in any way possible, answer any question the thought poses, push the thoughts out of your mind, figure out what your thoughts mean, try to determine whether the thought is true or false, but remember, it is a thought, not a fact. Analyze why the thought pops up now, convince yourself that you would never do what the thoughts are saying, change your behavior so you avoid the possibility of acting on your thoughts, offer reassurance one way or another. Every time you silence false comfort, you minimize the commentary that follows your intrusive thought. As you are learning, the major problem with unwanted intrusive thoughts is not so much the thought itself, but the internal dialogue that follows. If you notice worried voice and false comfort struggling with each other, find your way to wise mind, who will tell you it is a conversation not worth the effort. Accept and allow is actually more of an attitude than a technique. It is an attitude that acknowledges that what you resist tends to persist. It is an attitude of willingness. When you allow thoughts to be there, you are no longer struggling. The thoughts lose their power. You have the attitude of wise mind. As you practice handling your unwanted intrusive thoughts with this new attitude, you will find that your old habits are initially hard to break. You are not yet at the point where you fully believe the thoughts are unimportant, but that is your goal. helpful fact. Accept and allow is more of an attitude than a technique. Step 4. Float and feel. Float above the fray and allow the feelings to just stay there. Return to the present whenever you notice you are out front in an imagined future. Move from all that thinking into your current senses. What can you see, hear, smell, and touch? Concentrate on what is, as opposed to what if. Surrender the struggle. Worried voice. I can't stand this. I'm having these thoughts. I won't sleep tonight if I can't get rid of them. False comfort. Can't you push them away? You need to be relaxed and rested for the exam tomorrow. Just think about something else. A sleeping pill might get you to sleep. Wise mind. I'm watching you right now. You are entangled in your what-if thoughts. Imagining the future like this does not allow the present reality. Notice the floor under your feet or the sounds of the heating system. Focus on what you can sense right now. I'm sensing your frustration. Feel it and let the thoughts just be where they are. Sensations change from moment to moment. So do thoughts. Floating above the fray is a way to remove yourself from the turbulent experience. It is not about struggling with the thoughts. You will eventually observe your discomfort from a curious point of view, as opposed to immediately labeling it as dangerous or unendurable. Floating above the fray is connecting to your wise mind. Floating is an attitude of non-active, non-urgent, non-effortful observation. It is non-distressed, uninvolved, and passive. It is non-judgmental. It is allowing thoughts to be there for as long as they happen to be. It is the opposite of entanglement. Step 5. Let time pass. Allow time to pass. Don't urge it on. Observe your anxiety and distress from a curious, disinterested point of view. Do not keep checking to see if this is working. Just let the thoughts be there. They are thoughts. There is no hurry. Worried voice. I don't know how much longer I can tolerate this. I'm freaking out. When will this be over? False comfort. Let me read the coping techniques again because they don't seem to be working. Let's do affirmations. I am a good person. I am a good person. I am a good person. It says here these bad thoughts usually pass in a few minutes. Let's count down the time. Wise mind. As far as I'm concerned, I could sit with these thoughts all day. My discomfort has nothing to do with being in any danger. These are just thoughts. Allowing time to pass is one of the most important skills for recovery. Remember that any thought that produces a repeated feeling of urgency is a sign of anxiety. A feeling of urgency is discomfort, not danger. It comes automatically with the thoughts, but it is not a signal for action. Counting down until you feel better propels you into the future, increases your discomfort, and makes you fight the thought even harder. Checking to see if the steps are working is yet another way of stimulating them. Slow down. Let it be. You are dealing with discomfort, not danger. Time allows your normal calming reaction to take effect, on its own, naturally. Helpful fact. The feeling of urgency that comes with an unwanted intrusive thought is a false message from your brain. While you are allowing time to pass, if you notice that you have re-entered thoughts about the future and your usual catastrophic, worried, or judgmental commentaries, gently escort your mind back to the present. Notice that you are having some meaningless thoughts in the present. Whenever you notice that you are recoiling from the thoughts and struggling with them, go back to floating and letting time pass. There is no hurry. There is no danger. Pay attention to your feelings and sensations. Encourage your wise mind to stay present. Slow your pace. You can intentionally slow down, talk more slowly, and walk and act more slowly. You don't have to crowd out your thoughts or feelings. You might very well discover new sensations, new thoughts passing through your mind, and perhaps even new memories. Notice them as they pass through your awareness. Step 6. Proceed. even while you are having the thoughts, continue whatever you were doing prior to the intrusive thought. Worried voice, I feel really shaky. What if it comes right back? False comfort. Rest for a while. That should help. Take some time off. You just dodged a bullet. Don't stress yourself too much. Take it easy. Wise mind. Feeling shaky is just distressing, not dangerous. And the thought that it might come back is just another thought. It does not matter if a meaningless thought comes back. I'm going on with my routine, my activities, and my life. Remember that you are practicing new ways of relating to your thoughts. The most effective way to rob them of power is to continue doing the things you were doing and had intended to do prior to the thoughts. Imagine that unwanted intrusive thoughts are terrorists of the mind. Just as terrorists work by making people change the way they live, feeling compelled to abandon what you are doing is giving power to the message of terror. Even if you are feeling afraid, that's your amygdala doing what it is supposed to do. And even if your intrusions return, your most powerful response is to continue with your life as if nothing has happened. You are in the process of learning a new way to deal with unwanted intrusions, so there is no more empowering and reinforcing the next distressing thought. Your new attitude will rob it of its sting. Now let's look at some of the most common obstacles to this goal. Enemies of acceptance. There are three reactions that typically occur right after an episode of intrusive thoughts. All are common. They typically provoke entanglement and paradoxical effort and undermine the ability to practice the six steps above. Understanding how these typical reactions interfere with recovery makes it much easier to practice acceptance when an unwanted intrusive thought shows up. They are guilt, doubt, and urgency. Guilt. Guilt, and the reassurance seeking it often stimulates, gets in the way of adopting the attitude of acceptance. After having gone through an episode of unwanted intrusive thoughts, some people experience a wave of guilt. They then ask others for reassurance that they aren't a bad person, or that no one was harmed by thinking such thoughts. We call this externalizing the commentary. It means that you are taking your internal interchange between your own worried, false comfort, and wise mind voices and playing that out with real people in your life. This is a form of reassurance seeking. You are asking others to tell you that your thoughts are okay. And, like any reassurance, it provides temporary relief, but ends up adding power to the intrusion. Guilt can be associated with an enormous range of intrusive thoughts. Harming or self-harming intrusions can bring guilt in the form of, what kind of person am I that I would even have such a thought? You can feel unholy or sinful after having blasphemous thoughts. When asking others for reassurance in situations like this, you also run the risk of piling on additional guilt for upsetting or frightening them. You also may seek reassurance that having those bad thoughts does not reflect on your character, which reinforces the voice of false comfort. Remember that your goal is to silence false comfort. Here is a typical internal commentary or dialogue where someone with unwanted intrusive thoughts is debating with himself. Worried voice. Wise mind keeps saying it is okay to think these thoughts, but I believe that lusting in your heart is just as bad as actually doing it. False comfort. Worried voice, you don't even go to church. What is all this moralizing? I asked my priest, and he said everybody thinks bad thoughts, and you should just ask for forgiveness and you will be forgiven. Wise mind. Slow down. I see no need to ask for forgiveness. That applies only when you have actually willfully done something bad, a situation where you had a choice and chose poorly. We are not responsible for things that happen when there is no choice or control. It is simply not true that we can control what pops into our mind. We can control what we choose to do, but not the automatic thoughts that just show up. And here is how seeking external reassurance goes. You can see how similar it is to the internal dialogue that just cranks up the volume of worried voice and is not helpful. Self, I just had a terrible sexual thought about my niece, and she is so innocent and sweet. Friend, You know you would never do anything. Everyone has bad thoughts. Self: not as bad as these. Friend: you need to distract yourself. Just think of something else. Self: I try, but I can't. Friend: ask God to take the thoughts away and forgive you. Self: he's not listening to my prayers. Friend: of course he is. Self: what if I am beyond redemption? Here is a typical exchange that happens when someone has just had an unwanted intrusive thought. Sam: I had these thoughts about the woman who works next to me. I feel terrible. John: from time to time, everyone has sexy thoughts about other people. Even Jimmy Carter lusted in his heart. Forget about it, it's nothing. Sam: but suppose I actually do something? My wife would be so hurt, and she'd probably divorce me. John: whoa, buddy. You're just talking about sexy thoughts. Now you're imagining a divorce? You're fine. Just leave it alone. Or enjoy it. Don't worry about it. Sam: so you think I shouldn't feel guilty? John: you sure are making a big deal out of this. Maybe you should feel just a little guilty. Sam: I feel terrible. John: what's got into you? I thought we were going to watch the game. Sam: well, I just need to know I'm not a bad person. John: I already told you. Would you just stop this? Here is another. Kate: I think I may have postpartum depression. I keep having a really scary thought. Everyone does, right? Janet: lots of women have a hard time. You're not getting much sleep, you know. Kate: yes, but I keep thinking I might hurt my baby. It is horrible. Janet: you mean drop him accidentally? Or he might slip in the bathtub? Kate: I am scared to say this out loud, but no, more like on purpose. Janet: you should tell your doctor. Kate: I'm afraid she will lock me up. Janet: she can give you an antidepressant. It could help. Kate: do you think I might be like that woman who was in the news? Janet: I can babysit for you if you need some relief. Kate: so you think this is serious too, don't you? Looking for reassurance when you feel guilty might make you feel somewhat better in the short term, but it adds to your suffering when you realize that it sometimes upsets or frightens others and ultimately strengthens worried voice. Much better is to practice noticing that feelings associated with your thoughts will go away on their own if you just leave them alone. Doubt. Every time you have an unwanted intrusive thought, you want to know for sure that there is no danger and the intrusion will safely pass. Trying to abolish all doubts and eradicate uncertainty is a significant impediment to reaching an attitude of acceptance. Everyone wants to be absolutely sure that not struggling with the thought is a safe thing to do and that there is no danger in labeling it as a thought, as opposed to an impulse. You want to be certain that the thought is 100% not a reflection on your character and that absolutely you will not go crazy or lose control. This is a natural wish. Unfortunately, it is not one that can be satisfied. The fight for certainty is a major factor in keeping your unwanted intrusive thoughts so intense. And, if you think about it, where else do you demand absolute certainty? Do you put your car up on a lift and have a skilled mechanic check the brakes, steering, and transmission every time you go for a spin? Do you stay off sidewalks because cars sometimes lose control and run over pedestrians? Do you insist that someone taste your food before you eat? Do you ask your kids if they still love you every hour? Of course not. The problem is that unwanted intrusive thoughts feel so threatening. That is because anxious thinking takes over, and the thought, as abhorrent as it might be, seems to have a high probability of occurring. And you might think, even if the probability is fairly low, the consequences of killing someone or throwing a child out the window are so enormous and horrendous that the thought feels threatening and dangerous. False comfort. Wise mind, I need to find some better way to reassure a worried voice that the thoughts don't matter. But it keeps asking the same question over and over, no matter what I say. Wise mind. The problem is thinking worried voice is reassurable. What ifs will always come up. Worried voice has to learn to tolerate that it can't have a 100% guarantee. None of us really have certainty about anything. False comfort. But when I don't reassure worried voice, it gets worse, and it also gets angry at me. Wise mind. Tell worried voice that you love it, but if you keep reassuring it, it will never learn how to live with uncertainty, and that is something we all have to learn how to do. Seeking external reassurance is yet another step in the unhelpful fight for certainty. Once again, people seek external reassurance to quell their doubts. Frequently, their friends and family provide additional false comfort, just to keep their loved one comfortable in the moment, or to get them to stop asking for reassurance. It does not work past a few moments of relief. This kind of exchange is not helpful. Self. Tell me that you are sure that the plane will not crash while you are on it. I keep worrying over and over about it, and it feels like a premonition. Family member. Don't be silly. I promise I'll be fine. I'll call you when I get there. Self. But you really can't be sure. Please don't go. I'm getting a message here. Family member. Planes are safe. Self. Okay, but you have to call me as soon as you land. I'll be worrying about you the whole time. Sometimes you get so involved with the need for reassurance that you become addicted to that need. These are the reassurance junkies that we mentioned in Chapter 6. If you see yourself as a reassurance junkie, try this approach. Give yourself a weekly ration of reassurances. Act as if reassurance were very, very expensive and your budget is tight. Use it only when it seems absolutely necessary. It can be your first step in breaking the reassurance habit. This is very different from the ordinary sorts of reassurance and encouragement that people ask for and receive in the course of their daily lives. Real reassurance happens just once, it works, and the issue is closed. It is not an answer to an unanswerable question or an empty promise. The gun test. Finding your own wise mind. Because doubts inevitably accompany every step of the six steps, we would like you to explicitly call up your own wise mind. Wise mind is often drowned out by the noise of your other two entangled and struggling voices. Here is one avenue for contacting that part of you that really knows what is going on. The one that bought this book and has kept reading, the one who knows the unwanted thoughts are not the real you, the unflappable one who knows not to grant more meaning to a thought than it deserves. This thought experiment was inspired by Grayson. Imagine that you have suddenly been placed in a do-or-die situation. There is a gun to your head, ready to fire, and you get only one guess to answer the question. You cannot know for certain. All you get is your best guess. If you are right, you live. If you are wrong, you die. Do nothing and you die as well. There are no maybes, no hedging, and no time to think about it anymore, nor ask anyone else. This is it. You get one guess. Now answer the questions. Is this just an unwanted intrusive thought or a meaningful message? Should I apply the steps and allow the thought to be there? Should I turn myself into the police or the mental hospital? Or can I safely let this thought alone? Is it my best guess that this will pass if I don't get entangled and don't let false comfort get involved? Should I allow myself to be hijacked by this junk? If the imaginary stakes are do or die, your own wise mind will step forward. It might be 51% versus 49% in terms of certainty, but a part of you really does know what to guess. Most say that they know these thoughts are meaningless intrusions, but aren't 100% sure, and they wish they could be certain. The gun test forces them to make that choice. Urgency. As we have discussed, a feeling of urgency accompanies every unwanted intrusive thought. Giving in to that sense of urgency takes you in a direction that is contrary to the therapeutic attitude of acceptance. We know that each intrusion seems to indicate an emergency, or an emergency in the making, and you need to do something about it immediately. But this is a false alarm. When you get bluffed or tricked by this false alarm, you will spend your energy trying to turn off the alarm and encounter the effects of paradoxical effort, inadvertently increasing entanglement. Urgency makes you feel that the issues need to be addressed now, not later. It makes it hard to pause before labeling, to float above the fray, to accept and allow, and to let time pass. In fact, a feeling of urgency works counter to every essential step for coping with unwanted intrusive thoughts. There is a relationship between being bothered by uncertainty and the feeling of urgency. If something is unclear or uncertain, there is an urgent desire to clear it up now. Family and friends can start to believe that you are in an emergency too, and reinforce the idea that you have to do something now if you seek help from them. They come up with all the things false comfort has already tried. Self: I am being bombarded. I don't know if I can hold out any longer. I can't stand these crazy thoughts, and I'm going to lose my mind. I have to do something now. Friend: Maybe you should take a Xanax and lie down for a while. Self: I don't want to get addicted, and anyway, the thoughts just come back. Friend: Maybe you should pray for inner peace. I will hold your hand. I will stay with you until you feel better. Self: Do you think I need to go to the hospital? Friend: I will take you if you can't calm down, but I'm sure you'll be okay. Self: I can't make up my mind whether I should go. I feel like I'm missing my chance. Tell me again why you are sure I will be okay. The most helpful response to the feeling of urgency is to slow down, float above the fray, and practice letting time pass. Some helpful metaphors. Don't feel discouraged if you find it hard to grasp the shift in attitude that underlies the six steps. Here are some stories and metaphors to help illustrate the different aspects of this attitude shift. Applying the steps is not so much a set of rules of what to do, but reminders of how to be. The steps are counterintuitive. In other words, they seem at first to be the opposite of the common sense way of handling unwanted intrusive thoughts. These stories illustrate how doing the opposite of the common sense way is what actually works. The intruder at the party. Imagine you are giving a party that is very important to you, and you have invited friends, family, and coworkers, people you really care about. You have gone all out on the food, including some very expensive shrimp. Everyone seems to be enjoying themselves. Suddenly, you notice a scruffy guy you do not recognize. He is at the buffet and is helping himself to shrimp. You politely ask him to leave, but he simply ignores you. You have a choice now. You can confront him, call the police, have him thrown out of the party, and then stand by the door to make sure he does not return. This will immediately make a commotion, interrupt the enjoyment of others, and brand your party as the one when the police came. Or you can allow him to take some shrimp, just ignore him, and go about enjoying the party. Interestingly, no one else seems to mind this intruder as much as you. This illustrates how labeling and allowing, the opposite of fighting, changes perspective. Pay attention to what really matters. Steps 1 and 2 of the 6 steps to reduce distress over a thought require that you get the situation labeled correctly. When you label and understand that this scruffy guy is just taking shrimp, it allows you to realize that you have the option of not doing anything. There is no danger, although perhaps some irritation, and that option might be preferable to making a huge fuss and spoiling your party. In a similar manner, when you label a thought, no matter how repugnant, as just a thought, you give yourself the option of safely choosing to leave it alone. You are bigger than a thought, any thought, and it requires no control. You can then move toward the attitude of acceptance embodied in step 3. Whack-a-mole. Imagine that you are at an amusement park and spot the whack-a-mole game. There is a huge stuffed panda bear you would like to win. You put down your money and stand alert for the start bell. You pick up your mallet and discover, just as the clanging starts, that the mallet is tied down by a 6-inch cord, and there is no way to reach any of the moles as they pop up and down. Your score is clearly going to be 0. You have a choice now. You can get angry, feel cheated, be embarrassed, fight to tear your mallet off the cord, or you can laugh at the absurdity of the whole situation. Initial reactions here might be frustration, anger, embarrassment, or even anxiety. But by letting go and accepting, you can make something that seemed important, getting the panda bear, feel trivial and even funny. This is an illustration of step 3, accepting and allowing. Don't dignify the question. The president is having a press conference. Suddenly, someone jumps up and shouts, "Is it true that you are having an affair with your personal secretary?" He has a few options now. He can protest loudly, "Don't be ridiculous," and the papers will read, "President denies affair with secretary." Or he can have the reporter thrown out, "President rejects reporter who asks about his affair with secretary." Or he can look straight at the reporter, make it clear he heard the question, and then pivot to, "Next question, please." He can refuse to dignify the question with a response. This illustrates that there are some no-win situations in which any engagement will result in additional entanglement. An unwanted intrusive thought is one of those situations. No matter how obviously it seems to call for argument, rejection, or reaction, getting involved is not advised. Unwanted intrusive thoughts do not deserve the dignity of a response. This is another way to understand the meaning of acceptance in step 3. The waterfall. You are sitting comfortably and peacefully on a lawn chair on a ledge behind a waterfall. You can feel a little light spray, but you are perfectly safe. As you watch the water cascading in front of you, you can see some debris from upstream, and something goes by that looks like it might be valuable. But you know if you reach for it, you will have to forego the pleasure of this experience, strain yourself to catch it, and it might not be of any worth at all. You might even lose your footing. So you just watch it go by. This illustrates that the natural flow of the mind has debris that may sometimes feel important, but is not worth examining. In these cases, letting it go by is the best strategy. Not every thought we think is important or worth retrieving. Floating behind the waterfall and just observing is a way of understanding step 4, float and feel. Mud on the windshield. You are driving on a country road with large puddles from a recent rain, and you are running late for an appointment. A splat of mud lands on your windshield, and there is a disgusting dead bug in the middle of it. You have a choice now. You could put on the old windshield wiper, but it will just spread mud and bug parts all over the windshield. You can stop by the side of the road, get a rag, and spend time cleaning it off, and be even later for your appointment. Or you can just keep driving. You realize that you have a safe view of the road through and around the dirt, even though the mess is somewhat irritating. So you continue to drive. As the sun hits the windshield, it dries the mud, the wind flicks it off, and your windshield is almost clean by the time you arrive. This metaphor illustrates that sometimes doing nothing, floating past an intrusion, just letting it remain, is the most effective way to be. This is a way of understanding the principles embodied in steps 3, 4, and 5. Accept and allow, float and feel, and let time pass. Noisy neighbors. You are on the back porch reading, and you hear neighbors arguing with each other in angry voices. They do this all the time. You neither try to figure out what they are arguing about, nor do you go over and get involved. You just wait it out patiently and go back to your reading. They eventually stop. Headache. You have a headache. You still go to work, and at some point during the day, you notice that the headache has gone away. You did not do anything to make it go away. Sometimes, just continuing on with your everyday activity is an effective way to not struggle with an issue while you simply let time pass. These stories are ways of showing that everyday life is filled with examples of the suggestions outlined in the 6 steps to reduce stress over a thought. Continuing what you do while allowing time to pass is a way to let your mind and body relax by itself, naturally. You now have an attitude and strategy for better dealing with unwanted intrusive thoughts that ambush you out of the blue. This strategy and attitude encourage a new perspective and eventually will significantly reduce your distress. It will take practice to avoid the anxiety traps and hijackings and to learn these new ways. But please don't lose hope. This approach has been helpful for hundreds of people like you who initially felt overwhelmed and at wit's end. You have already learned so much and made such significant changes. The next chapter introduces a plan of deliberate actions that can develop new brain circuitry so unwanted thoughts lose their power and stop bothering you at all. Chapter 8. Getting over unwanted thoughts for good. Our goal is to change the way your brain works. This will result in changing how unwanted thoughts feel, so eventually they will stop bothering you. What you have learned by now is that your usual and customary way of coping with unwanted intrusive thoughts fails to do that. In fact, it does the opposite and keeps your brain, your body, and your thoughts locked into their present cycle. We have explained how the attitude of acceptance is what opens the door for changes to occur. And in this chapter, we lay out a program of deliberate actions to enable this to happen. There is a widespread agreement that the most effective way to change your brain and to get over your unwanted intrusive thoughts is, believe it or not, to allow yourself to think your frightening thoughts on purpose. In other words, to expose yourself to the thoughts intentionally while practicing new and better ways to manage your reactions. When you take charge of the experience, instead of being bombarded by it, you rewire your brain and create lasting changes. This is called exposure work. The attitude of acceptance is essential to gaining the most benefit from exposure work. In fact, exposure work without acceptance is just a recipe for misery and is ineffective. Being willing to be uncomfortable is important, but if you also understand how exposure works, it may give you additional motivation and courage. This will set the foundation for optimizing practice. Helpful fact: exposure is the active therapeutic ingredient for overcoming anxiety. Get uncomfortable on purpose. Why should you make yourself more uncomfortable on purpose? Aren't you reading this book in the hopes of becoming less uncomfortable? The answer is that we want you to do better than just feel more comfortable. Our ultimate goal is to help you end your suffering. That means taking a larger perspective and agreeing to put up with more discomfort in the present so you can suffer less in the future. The way to the other side of troubled water is through it, since there is no effective way to run around it. And we know that to rewire the brain, we have to activate fears to change them. The good news is that practicing isn't as frightening as you might imagine. Remember that your amygdala is just an alarm system. Think of it like an infant. It has no subtlety or words, so you can't teach it new information by using words. You have to activate fear in order to teach it that fear is not necessary. When you actively and willingly trigger the fear pathway, you allow your brain to be rewired. That allows fear to decrease and for the adoption of the attitude of acceptance. By now you have learned a great deal about how your brain and your body, in conjunction with your 3 inner voices, worried voice, false comfort, and wise mind, create and continue to power your unwanted intrusive thoughts. Exposure is the opportunity to change the ways those characters interact. Exposure gives you the opportunity to put in effect the information you have already learned. Exposure is the way to turn your learning from knowing in your head to knowing in your heart, brain, and body. Exposure is the way to find and trust your own wise mind. Exposure is the opportunity to train your brain to change. You can never become fluent.